She was lip syncing DJ Khaled. Is it Khaled or Khaled? DJ Khaled.
I think it's Khaled. Khaled.
There it is. Thank you. I should know that, shouldn't I? Hello, makers. Welcome to our studio, a branch of the Making Conversation podcast, where we chat all about making the app and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing here at Making. My pronouns are she, her, and my Making app username is Knit Pearl. Now, one of the things that I did when I first started working at Making was start our TikTok account, as it was one of the ways that we were going to try and reach a new audience. It was content that we wanted to test, and TikTok's a big audience that you do, as a marketer, you want to share your message, that platform. I had so much fun making new friends, not only for myself, but for Making. And one of the first people who supported us right out of the gate was somebody who you might know. Okay, somebody who you probably know, especially if you're involved in the fiber art community on TikTok. The queen of the curse word pillows, the artist formerly known as Crochet It Ain't So, and now the morning crafter, Callie. I am so excited that you are here.
Oh, thank you, Jen. That was such a nice intro.
Now, I wanted to celebrate you being the guest on this week's podcast by talking a little bit about crochet. So I know that you're more than crochet, but that's how I met you. And well, we're just going to go with that. So what I did is I searched crochet news. And here's some news from the crochet world over the past few weeks. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. So, number one, from HelloMagazine.com. Love Island is back, and the host's first outfit is making waves. Maya James's first outfit on this new season is a backless crochet gown with cutouts. Number two, from People.com. Heidi Klum recently wore a crochet cover-up while boating in France after the 2023 Cannes Film Festival. Number three, TikTok creator Alex Earle wore a crochet two-piece skirt set during one of her latest videos where she posted a quote-unquote music video. She was lip-syncing DJ Khaled and Drake's collab song Grease, vacationing in Mykonos with her gal pals, according to 17.com. So do you know who Alex Earle is, being somebody active on TikTok? Because I literally was like, who's that?
No, I joke that I am like the old mom on TikTok, and I still am confused about the following that I have gained, because I'm like, who are these kids these days? The name rings a bell, but if Alex Earle are standing in a sea of people, I do not think I would be able to pick them out of a crowd.
Yeah, yeah, I'm right there with you. And finally, the Chicago White Sox reinstated left-hander Garrett Crochet from the injured list on Tuesday.
They're my new favorite player.
What a fun last name, Garrett Crochet. And that was the news of crochet this week.
Wow. That's really good news. I love very all of those things, except for I don't love that I'm sure some of those crochet pieces that our friends were wearing were probably mass produced. And we know the unethical standing of crochet.
It's like, you know what I was about to say. I wanted to talk about how crocheted clothes, like just giving that friendly reminder that there's not a machine that can truly duplicate crochet, like knitting machines, and like things like granny squares especially cannot be made by a machine. So if you are purchasing clothing that is crocheted and it's, we'll just say, inexpensive, the person who crocheted that was not paid a fair wage. So if you're loving the crocheted look, keep that in mind. Make sure that you're paying very well for crocheted items, or learn to crochet. And I know somebody who's teaching a class on how to crochet on the Making platform in the fall.
It's me.
It's you. It's very exciting.
I am super excited. Beginning crochet is like getting the foundations. Even I've been crocheting most of my life, like even reminding myself to slow down and learn the foundations again, and then teach those who have wanted to dabble and then get a chance to. That's like a highlight for me. So I really can't wait to do the class.
So if you want to check out Callie's class and sign up, if you go to the Making app and tap on shop, there is a classes tab that you can go into, and it is listed there. And to be honest, you won't see many classes right now because we are taking a little bit of a summer break. We recognize that once it gets nice outside, people are like not really wanting to sit in front of a computer on Zoom. We're taking a summer break for July and August, and we will be back in the fall with classes. Also, if you are somebody who wants to teach a class, you can go to themakingapp.com/teach and learn more there. But for now, Callie, I would love for you to dive in and intro yourself to the listeners.
Absolutely. So my name is Callie Holly. My pronouns are she, her, and I am a fiber artist, as Jen mentioned. I mostly do crochet, but I enjoy making all the things with fiber. So I got into needle felting early last year. So I've been doing needle felting for almost 2 years. I also like to punch needle. I just learned to knit, and that is because Jen had been encouraging me since we've known each other on the internet to learn to knit. So I've been learning to knit and then have become addicted to knitting.
That's a nice way to put it.
Berating me maybe is what
I was encouraging you. Yeah, berating.
Yeah, so I finally did learn to knit, but I am like a baby knitter that I want to do more. And I live in a very strange little Scottish beach town in Florida. And I will say very publicly, I do not claim Floridians. Florida is hellscape. The beach is nice. Dunedin is lovely. It is a Scottish founded city. So there are literally are like bagpipers on the beach, which is a random thing to see. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Bagpipers on the beach.
The other day, I did have a romanticized my life moment. We were taking the kids to the playground. Like every weekend, we go to our same little breakfast spot, which is a cute little outdoor seating thing. We have our coffee, we have our breakfast, and then we usually go to the playground. And so my husband and I needed a second cup of coffee. I said, let's drop you off at the playground. I'll walk over, get coffee from the shop, and then I'll walk back and meet you at the playground. And so it's a beautiful day. I'm like walking with coffees, and then I hear the bagpipers in the distance. I can see the boats at the marina. Then I see the kids playing. Everybody's happy and nobody's upset. I was like, wow, this is a good moment in this particular setting. So
it sounds like you're like in the happy bubble of a scary place of Florida.
One of the happy. Yes. Yeah. So we used to live in downtown St. Petersburg. If you know anything about St. Pete, people say it's like the Austin of Florida. Very true. Like it's super quirky, artsy. There's murals everywhere. It's maybe don't quote me because I don't know if this is accurate anymore, but it was at one point and maybe still is the largest Pride Festival in the Southeast. People come from all over the world to come to the Pride Fest in St. Pete. And then Dunedin is a 45, 30-minute drive north of that. And we also have Pride in Dunedin, and our city is very LGBTQ friendly and also artsy, which is really lovely. So if there is going to be some bright spots, they do exist, I promise. But Florida is, as I mentioned, not great. Not great.
I'm glad that you found your spot. Okay, so with our powers combined, Callie and I have about 25 years-ish of marketing experience, and we'll get into a brief history of that shortly. But today we're going to be talking about marketing for your small business. So from pattern designers to yarn dyers, even leather bag makers, we know a lot of you have taken your crafting love and leveled up to owning a small business. And maybe you have it all figured out for yourself, but maybe you have some questions or need some guidance or even just want to hear some ideas. So let's hop in. Callie, I know that you have not only worked in marketing, like I said, but you also run a crafting business. So I want to hear about your journey from the start.
Yeah, sure. So I kind of mentioned, but I've been crafting my entire life. So my mom taught me to crochet when I was 5. So I was not setting up a crochet stand. But if anyone remembers using beads to make the little lizard animals, and then you could like make the little bees, and there was the string that interlocked those. I will say my first foray into crafting business was I used to sell those instead of a lemonade stand. I made lizards and little bee earrings on the side of my house, my parents' house. It was not a lucrative business model. Then when I became a grown-up, I started my career marketing after college. And so that was like my like day job. So I work in marketing for software as my day job. But with my crafting journey, this started probably in about 2012 or so. I got very into embroidery and cross-stitching. So I was doing cross-stitching and I started doing kind of grandma's cross-stitch, but like not. So instead of Home Sweet Home, it was Gangsta's Paradise. And it was a lot of like 90s rap lyrics is what I would like sort of put on these cross stitches, which I, at this point, everyone has done it. You've seen it everywhere. It's not a new idea by any means, but this was back in 2012. And we had, when I was living in St. Pete, we had a market every month called Indie Market. And so I had a booth at Indie Market and just like ran my business with the market circuit. So I would do Indie Market every single month, build inventory for the month and market on social media, Instagram mostly. TikTok wasn't a thing at the time. And it was hard to gain traction, but at the market itself, I would sell out every market. That was really exciting. It was a lot of word of mouth. People were buying a lot of gifts and then they would get my business card and order for custom stuff. So that was what I did in 2012. Well, then, you know, like life ramps up. I also have a autoimmune condition. I have Crohn's disease. And so my disease actually ramped up in like 2016. So I kind of took a break from crafting, especially market work, because it was just so intense to build inventory, set up, do the market, sell out, do more inventory, set up. It was just like this constant cycle that I did not have the energy to do. Then I had my first baby in 2019. And so raising a little human being along with like doing a day job, crafting business kind of fell off at that point. But I would do things here and there for friends. You know, they would ask to have a baby gift made and I would do that, sure. But it wasn't really a business model. And then the pandemic hit. And one of the things that I'm sure a lot of us all do is find ways to cope with things in ways that make us feel comfy inside. And for me, that was like returning to crochet. So I like picked up my hook for the first time in a long time and started crocheting again. And I just made myself some pillows for our living room because I was stuck at the house. So I was like, gotta spruce this up with some yellow pillows. So I made some pillows. I bought a pattern from a maker named Ruby Webbs on Etsy. And they were great. They're beautiful. Like these little diamond pillows. And I loved them. They were easy to make. And then I was like, the bug was back. So I, of course, bought some more yarn. And then I was like, I'm gonna make myself this shirt. And I made like a little shirt. And then I was like, man, I'm probably gonna make my son this blanket. I made him a blanket. My friend was moving into a new house at this time. And I was texting my girlfriends like all pictures of stuff I was doing. And she's like, can you make me a pillow that says, can I curse on this podcast?
Yeah. Disclaimer. As I said, Callie is the queen of the curse word pillows. So if you have anyone that has ears that does not want to hear certain things every once in a while, then maybe put your earbuds in right now. Okay.
Perfect. So she asked me to make a pillow that said fuck on it. And she thought that was hilarious. And I was like, yeah, I can make that. And I made it. And I was like, I wonder if anybody else would ever be interested in making this. And so I wrote my first pattern in 2020. And I stuck it up on Etsy. And at that point, I had started a TikTok just of some of the crochet stuff I was making. And I posted that, and it went, in my world at that moment, what I considered viral. And people were like, what is this? And so then people started buying the pattern. So then I was like, let's just hit all the curse words. So then bitch came shortly after, and so on and so forth. And those really took off, and social media helped. And then the business was like in its actual state that it is today. It was born at that moment. So of many trials and tribulations and errors and things that I had done all of those years prior, this was the one that really has stuck. And part of it for me personally was like the ability to generate passive income because I do have a full-time job. I have two kids. Like life is a bit more chaotic. And so I do not have the time to fulfill real solid item orders. So being able to generate passive income to kind of supplement the thing I love to do, which is crafting and making, was all I was in it for. I was just like, I just need to make a couple extra bucks that I can spend at the craft store and that my husband won't be like, why do you keep going to Joann's today? And I'm like, leave me alone. But it has done more than that. And I have then brought me to today. And that's the journey to get here.
I feel like before crochet became what it is now, like over the pandemic with Gen Z really getting into it and everything, you know, it would be like, oh, crochet is a grandma thing, blah, blah, blah. Of course, people listening to it here don't necessarily think that way. But what do you think the calling was with the curse words and the crochet mixed together? Like, what brought people out that were like, yes, I want to crochet that pillow?
Yeah. So I think it is the irony of it. That's, I think, why the cross stitch endeavor kicked off so well. Also, I live in a hot state. So typical crochet items do not do well here. Like when I had my booth, I would also do crochet items. So I'd have scarves and hats and stuff, and people can wear them for 2 days out of the year here. So it's like a lot harder of a sell to sell like these traditional items. But I think the fun part is I could argue almost everybody knows someone of an older generation in their life that has crocheted. Likely they have a blanket that their grandmother or aunt or family member made for them when they were babies that they have carried through for life. And then they have them tucked away in an attic somewhere or still sitting on their bed. And so they have all of these things that they associate with a gift that was given at like a grown-up time in life by someone who is of the older generation, kind of passing down these, oh, here's a nice like blanket for you. And oh, I made him a little tiny hat with a ball on it. And all of those things are great and those still happen. And I love that. But I think the irony of having this traditionally conservative grandma craft that is very intentional for like this more just antiquated style, like turning it on its head and being like, no, this can be decorating your home. It can look like a granny craft, but when you do a double take, you're like, did that pillow say that? I do sell like my finished pillows, my originals, and I did ship one off for a housewarming gift for somebody that someone bought. And the pillow says, we had sex in here. And I was like, I designed it in mind with putting in a guest room because I think it'd be so funny if someone goes to your house and they see this like really nice rose pillow with like cream letters. And then they actually read it and they're like clutching the pearls.
I was just going to ask you where you get inspirations for your designs. But I think that just where do you put pillows and like what can be said with that pillow?
Yeah, exactly. It comes from like my dirty mind, my immature brain of just I have this humor of a 14-year-old. So I think that's part of it. But then also like there's definitely inspiration of things that I see or that I think are like, that's hilarious. And then I'm like, well, you should just put that on a pillow. And then, of course, my friends who are now like they're into it. They're like, hey, I saw this thing today. That'd be so funny on a pillow. I'm like, you're actually correct. I will find a way to make that go on a pillow.
Like the word butts.
Your favorite, the one I made just for you, butts.
So it's funny because I just realized last night, I've been telling everyone that I've only crocheted one thing and it's the pillow that says butts, but I also crocheted a lentil. So I'm sorry. I've been lying. Accidental lying has been happening on this podcast. I apologize, but yes, I've crocheted two things. One is lentil, which is our brand mascot, a little cat amigurumi. You can find the free pattern if you download the Making app and go into your profile and then your studio and then tap from Making. There's like a pattern area there that has a bunch of free patterns. I also was very persistent, not only for Callie to learn how to knit, but also to create a pillow that says butts so that that could be something that I crocheted. So I've also made that and it does live on our bed.
And if I get better at knitting, my goal is to at least chart out and make knit versions of my pillows as they exist so that I can broaden the horizon to all of my fiber friends. That's my goal. That will probably be like a decade from now, but it is a goal.
That's amazing. I do think, though, that at least from my level of crochet, which is very, like you called yourself a baby knitter. I'm a baby crocheter. Like I haven't been doing it for very long. I definitely pick up knitting needles before I pick up the crochet hook. And that's just because it's what I've been doing longer. But your patterns are like, that was really easy for me to do. Like I was able to knock it out and with very minimal tear back and like redo. So, you know, if you are wanting to crochet one of Callie's patterns, first, take her class on the Making app in the fall. And then you can definitely do this. It's they're very easy to follow along with. Yes. But also, I would say not too easy to where the experienced crocheter would get bored because you're crocheting like a curse word or something funny onto a pillow. That's not boring.
The patterns were written. I wrote them with beginner in mind because I know how hard it is also to like pick a project that feels like it's taking forever. Like I want people to be able to bang these out in a few hours over the course of a couple of days and feel like they have a finished project that they can be like, I made this hilarious thing, and then gift it to their friends or sell it on their Etsy's or on the Making or wherever they want to sell it. They can sell a finished work all day long. That's fine with me.
So I do want to ask about this pivot that you made with selling finished goods to creating patterns. I know that's what worked with your time, but I'm sure that there are people out there who are trying to figure out how to make something like this work for their lives. Do you have any general advice for those people? I know that not everyone is at a market and wanting to pivot to something else, but I think just the idea of changing something within your own small business can be scary. What advice do you have for everyone for that?
Oh, goodness. That's such a good question. First of all, I don't think that everybody has to go out and make something digitally available to be successful with their items. And I think that it's hard sometimes on social media. You see a lot of designers and it feels like they're really successful and they're able to get sales. You look at their Etsy pages and they have like tens of thousands of sales. And that's really scary sometimes to someone who's making whole items. I think my thing is, make sure you're sticking with something that you enjoy doing, because if you don't enjoy it, you're going to burn out really quickly and you're going to stop loving the craft as much as you possibly do now. But then also do some research, like some market research, and look out there at what people seem to be gravitating to. What are the trends right now? Look for the things that are trending that are either already in crochet, like in mass produce, like Jen was saying, make it yourself and then sell it so that people know they don't have to buy from a mass produced place. Or what's trending adjacent to crochet. I can't remember what the style's called, but like the bubbly rainbow candles and like the wiggly shelves. That's really in. That's a really in style. Mm-hmm. And so there's some way you can take your craft, whether that's crochet or knitting or even painting or any of those things, and find a way to like hit on the trends to see if that would stick. And then my other last piece of advice, I have so much that I could talk about here, but is talk to people that you would assume would be a buyer in your demographic. So that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to buy, but if you know that, generally speaking, people in your age group, in your area or close by are who you're targeting outwardly, interview them. Sit them down, buy them a cup of coffee, and just say, what would you find really cool about a product that I have? What would make you buy? What would make you turn away? What price point would make you turn away? Also, it's an opportunity to explain to them why handmade goods tend to cost a lot more. But just like get in their heads a little bit and think like a buyer. Don't think like a maker and don't think like a seller. Even down to your descriptions or your like tagging on things. If you're thinking like you have a lot of assumptions and preconceived notions of what your product is that a buyer that doesn't know what you're talking about does not have. So they're possibly not going to find your stuff because you're thinking like you instead of thinking like them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we definitely know that you are amazing at marketing for your small business. And, we'll dive into some other stuff like that in a little bit here. But I also want to hear about your not normal life. That's not the right way to say it. But like outside of your crafting business, what was your marketing journey there?
Sure. Oh, I like talking about this. This is so fun for me. So I did not go to school for marketing. I went to school for biology and I was convinced I was going to work with animals. That's what I wanted to do. That was like my life goal. And luckily I did that in college. And so when I actually got to do the thing that was my life goal, I was like, it's awesome, but it doesn't pay the bills. And also I'm working every holiday and weekend and that kind of sucks. So I actually moved to Toronto very briefly with my now husband, at the time boyfriend. When I came back, I was looking for a job and just trying to figure out some stuff. And so I ended up being at an entry-level marketing position. Now, this was in 2011. And just to talk about antiquated marketing at the time, the company I was at, my job as a marketing coordinator was to take contracts, like physical printed contracts from the account executives on these marketing programs. And I would scan, I had a desk scanner, and I had to scan them on my desk, like into the computer. And then I had to manually type into the computer all of the numbers from the contract and make sure those two things matched up. There was like a mailroom at this place. I mean, it was like the office. Like it really truly was a gray cubicle zone. But anyway, I did that for a little while, then got promoted and then was recruited to go to a software company from there to work in product marketing. And so I did product marketing for a while and we had a lot of brands at that company that we had acquired. And then moved into solutions marketing and then was on maternity leave and came back to inherit the content and social team, which is my big love now. And so I started leading the content and social team at that company for a while and then was recruited from there to go to the company I'm currently at, which is a fully remote company as well, software. And then what was cool about that place is I got to build the content engine from the ground up. So they didn't really have a content structure of how they needed to build awareness in the market. So I got to come in and not only find some amazing people that got to join the team, but then also work to say, like, what will that cadence be? How are we going to go to market? How are we going to build awareness? How are we going to continue to optimize this going forward? And that brings me to today, still doing that.
Again, you pivoted from working with animals to being in marketing. I love that.
Yeah, maybe that's like our theme is like the pivot.
Exactly. How I kind of went through all of this is I actually never finished college. I was like in a spot where I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I also didn't want to just go through the motions because I wasn't from a family that could just be like, here's a lot of money to go to college to figure it out. So after I moved to Seattle, I was like this close to going to cosmetology school. But then I started working at a hotel in Seattle called Hotel Max. The general manager was super fab and saw all this potential in me. And he was like the kind of manager that prioritized experience and passion over a degree, which really worked in my favor. Yeah. So I worked my way up to be the entertainment sales manager, where I was like booking touring bands into the hotel. So that was like combining a few of my loves there. I started writing more copy and doing more marketing stuff and getting creative and all that. And then finally, one day, the president of the company was like, hey, Jen, we want you to try out this social media thing for the hotels, specifically for Hotel Max at first. And this was, again, before Instagram was even a thing. And so it was a lot of throwing stuff at a wall to see what sticks. And really, I mean, that kind of is still what marketing is today, especially when you're working at a startup or trying out, you know, different things or launching a new product, whatever. But after being recruited to work at Uber to help launch its third city, Seattle, that's really where I learned a ton more about the different areas of marketing. So as a community manager at Uber, way, way back in the day in 2011, you know, when I first started, there was 31 employees at total, like of the entire company. And a community manager, we did everything rider facing. So if you saw an email, had a customer service email, saw social media, saw a campaign, went to an event, that was all one person.
Crazy.
Yeah. Talk about burnout. But I did learn a lot. And it was very cool to be able to like dip your toe into all of these different things. Even though, you know, the whole phrase, jack of all trades, master of none, I do feel like in that situation, you also become very masterful at all of these things because you have to in a way. But I will say that the most fun that I had was like in-person events and like just like getting to know the community and, you know, the drivers and all of that. So much creativity that came out of being in this early stage startup. We had to get super scrappy and it's, you know, we had no marketing budget. It was this new thing where you also had to build trust, right? So it's like really funny to me to see ads for like Uber Eats with Elton John and Trevor Noah and Jennifer Coolidge. I'm like, mind blown. Wow. I wonder how much money that cost. Yeah. I did everything for rider credits. We got creative. But I don't know. That's still wild to me every time I see something like that on television from Uber. But after that, I did spend some time in fintech. And then I got to work a little bit of agency life here in Seattle at a place called Wong Duty, which is, I always have to say, Mr. Wong and Mr. Duty came together and made an agency. And that's where the name comes from. But that was awesome because I got to see like a different side of things coming from a place where you literally have to do it all because you are the person, the one person that does it. And you have a small budget or whatever, to a place where, you know, there is a person to do each thing. It was really interesting. And also working for different clients and learning how to, again, pivot and be able to compartmentalize different marketing things for different things that you're doing for different clients. That was pretty cool. And then Ashley asked me to join Making. And I'm right back to that small startup space, but now with a bigger emphasis on work-life balance, which is nice.
That is the way to do it. You know, you said something there that I think is interesting. So like, I think for both of our journeys, we've experienced this, do all the things to, first of all, I mean, you're young and you're hip and you're energized and haven't had life beating you down. No, I'm kidding, but also not. But you know, you want to become like the jack of all trades. You are comfortable and happy doing all of the things because also you don't know what you like yet. And then I think as you grow in your career, you are able to specialize a little more. And also, if you have great leadership or great mentors or great peers that sort of like help you find avenues that they see are a good fit for you, it really helps drive like where you're going. But I think like bringing it back to our making family, like you have to do all the things because there is typically, unless you're really lucky, there's no one else to do it for you. So you have to get really good at figuring out your sweet spot, and you have to get really good at figuring out, even if you don't like to do something, but you have to, like how to do that minimally but effectively so that you can go do the things you like to do and you don't have to like get stuck answering customer service emails for 6 hours or whatever.
Speaking of the making family, every week we like to talk about something that inspired us in the making app. So what inspired you this week in the making app, Callie?
Oh my gosh. So I tend to gravitate, especially on the making app, to makers who do things that I just do not do, cannot do, shouldn't do for my own sanity. I tend to really love like any ceramicist or potter, but then I came across Martina from Dimensional Weaving. Oh my gosh. Those are some of the most beautiful pieces I've ever seen. She does these like woven tapestries, but then has like needle felted items and found objects that are on top of those weavings and they tell a story. I was so blown away. And of course I found like a needle felted mushroom, which I have like one hanging above me somewhere over here. And so, of course, I was like, oh, a needle felted mushroom. And then, of course, I started like looking at her stuff and I'm just blown away. So, Martina, I love you.
Yes, Martina has been a part of the community for such a long time. I feel like that's like a trend that I've been saying every week when somebody calls somebody out. I'm like, oh, I know them. And of course I do. Everything that she posts to the app is like mind blowing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Amazing.
So I opened the app yesterday and Becca D posted these little necklaces and they're tiny little coffee cups
that have
painted flowers on the side.
Yes.
Oh my God, it's so cute.
I'm like, do I need this? I need this. Becca, hit me up.
Exactly. And then our friend Sarah, who is, I think it's Neblina, is how her username is pronounced, N-E-B-L-I-N-A. Everything that Sarah posts, I just absolutely love. She does a lot of natural dyeing with yarn and fabric. I know that she lives south of the equator, and so right now she's in the opposite of what we're in, and it's cold there. So she plants a garden at her family's house in the state. And she'll go harvest it in our summer, which is her winter, to then do natural dyeing. I'm like, this is brilliant.
That's like such a commitment wonderful. To the craft. Blown away by people who do things that I just like cannot, should not, will not do. Because that is pre-planning, which I struggle with. And then being able to follow through to say, like, I know I'm going to want this when this blooms. And then I'll go get it. And then I will do that for the yarn, which then produces this amazing product like year round. It's so cool. So cool.
I know. I also like that with the comment with this specific post. So she, in this post, she's dyeing yarn, but I don't know that it's a natural dye. Oh, it is a natural dye. Okay. Just kidding. She was talking about pH. See, this is how much I know about dyeing yarn. I don't. So there's that. But it says, I lowered the pH to get orange, but then the dye bath changed color when I added yarn. Natural dyeing makes me wish I knew more chemistry. I'm like, math, chemistry, cannot compute. But it's amazing how just the smallest thing can change natural dyeing.
Yeah.
And I love how she like talks about it every time she posts. So it's just definitely a very informative follow for sure on the making up.
Love that. You know how they say marketing is art and science? I feel like yarn dyeing and is the same. Like art and science makes amazing colors and dyes.
Yes, 100%. Hey, I just wanted to jump in here and mention something really quick before we dive into some marketing tips. Hi. We're making, and we have built and are continuing to build, the very first social marketplace app for makers, crafters, and artists by makers, crafters, and artists. We recently launched the marketplace on Making and are working on some improvements behind the scenes, more features to help shop owners market their Making shop, but also we're working on some awesome marketing things on our end to help promote the marketplace. And don't worry, we will be sharing some great marketing tips for those with a shop in the Making marketplace once we get to that point. We chose to do a soft launch in hopes that it would give people plenty of time to create their shop and upload their PDF patterns, books, etc. So if that's you and that's what you sell, now is the time to jump in and add your goods. Now, if you sell finished items, supplies, etc., you will be able to join the marketplace soon, promise. Okay, now do me a favor. Grab your phone, go to your browser, and type in themakingapp.com. And if you haven't already, download the app, sign up, and get to know our amazingly supportive multi-craftual community. And of course, if you have any questions, send us a note at hq@makingco.com. All right, back to the episode. So as we're talking about marketing for small business, I thought that the best way to do this, because let's be real, marketing for any business, we could talk for 5 million hours about all of the different things that you could be doing. So instead of that, we put a call to action out to our audiences on Instagram, in the Making app, on TikTok, and asked if anybody had questions. So if something isn't covered here, we definitely want to help. So I invite you to send an email with your question to hq@makingco.com. What we could do is maybe do a follow-up episode if we get enough comments and questions back. But we do have some questions here. So from the Making app, at Worthy Design Studio said, email marketing and newsletters and whether it's a bother. I just want to like start off by making it very clear that if your business is just you running the show or even a small team, you can't do everything and you shouldn't do everything. It will lead to burnout. Nobody wants that. But I do think that email marketing is great. It's a direct conversation with your most loyal customers that you can add calls to action. I think a really great example of this for small business is Mish Made on TikTok. She uses her email to let people know when drops are happening on her website. So she creates these beautiful earrings and she doesn't always have product on her site because that's how good they are. But she will send out emails a few hours before drops happen. You know, those things, if you're going to have sales and even any special like live events on social media, it's a great way to communicate that. They can also provide value to your customer, which in turn can help keep your brand top of mind. We're actually testing out some new newsletter content that includes a rotation schedule of like news, suggestions on what to watch and listen while crafting, which is one of my favorite topics, if you know me, people to know in the community, etc. And the metrics are really showing that this content is something that people are looking forward to and enjoying reading about. So I think just figuring out what works for your community, but it really can be what you want it to be. And again, going back, what makes you excited to write? Another good example is Andrea, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. She does her emails through Substack, but essentially she will just write about what she cooked for dinner that day. And it's this beautiful story of like how she went to her garden, picked things. And it really like tells the story of her business, her brand within what she's doing as she's making dinner. And it's just a very beautiful use of storytelling for her. It's just, I think it's just a great way for your base to get to know your brand better, get to know you better. That builds brand love. And that should be like one of the biggest goals for everyone.
Like you said, you hit the nail on the head with like building the story. And there's something really intimate if you do have a cultivated list of people who are actively looking forward to written communication from you, because the act of reading takes more time. Watching a TikTok video is very quick and looking at an Instagram post is very quick, but actively like looking in the email against all the noise from every other company who's trying to email your entire base of people, those are your most engaged and most kind of loyal fans, honestly. And so treat them like as if they're like in your inner circle. You can almost give them this like sneak peek and little almost like they're a member of this community that you have built, where the rest of the masses don't necessarily get that side of you. And if they want to get brought in, then you can say, oh, well, subscribe to my newsletter or my email and I'll update you on all the cool happenings on. Yeah, it's hard though. Email's a hard game because it's noisy in terms of marketing. There's just so much out there that your customers are reading. To find people who will read it is like, that's the gold.
100%. And again, as you said before, like thinking about who your target audience is, right? What do you think they would want to read? What would be fun for them when they open that email? And you don't always want to just say, here's a sale, click this and buy this. I think utilizing newsletters and email as a brand building tool is so important because, like you said, Callie, those people are your most engaged. So also from the Making app, DCatB wanted to know about marketing with limited or more targeted social media usage. Also, where to market off of social media. Low pressure marketing strategies, please and thank you. So with the targeted social media usage, I think this goes back to figuring out what works for you. What is the most bang for your buck? And again, this can ebb and flow, right? So if you have found that three platforms are really giving you the most return on your time investment, and maybe one of those kind of starts going away, pull the levers of your marketing efforts based on what's working. Just think about how you can best use your precious time.
Jen, you're like saying all of the things that I would have absolutely said in this exact same way, is protect your energy, protect your time, and just do the things that you know are going to work most effectively, and then try out the stuff as like a secondary element instead of going full tilt on all of the things. A/B, you know, marketing's like really popular to say things like A/B test. So change one variable and see how that does. So if that one variable is that you're going to post the same thing on two different platforms, okay, we'll see how they perform. And then maybe the next time you post the same exact thing, you change one variable for one platform. Only change one at a time, because then you know if it's working or not working. And then you can start to like what they call optimize on those areas. And you can say, that really does not work. That audience did not like that thing I did. So maybe next time I'm going to pull back on that a little bit and then tweak what I might say or how I approach it or whatever. But also sometimes the algorithms just hate anything you do, and you can have the best content in the world and just no one sees it. So like, try not to get down on yourself if it feels like it's a very limited audience or very targeted group of people. You could work on a video for 2 seconds and you get a million views, and you could work on a video for an hour and get 1,000 views or 100 views. The platforms are kind of crazy.
These places are also places that people are going to go to when they find your brand, whether it be on social media or off social media and somewhere else. They're going to go there to see what you're all about, to see if your values align. If you've seen something good come from posting on a platform like TikTok or Instagram, just again, using those levers with your energy, but knowing that people are still going to go search for you in those places to see what your brand message is, what your values are, what you stand for, if they align with all of that. Because that's another thing that a lot of people are very passionate about now, is put your money in places that align with what you believe in, right? And so that's another thing to think about, is how do you put your values out into the world? And I just went off on a total tangent, but that happens here. And we call them side quests. Don't be quiet about that stuff. Humans are your target market, and we want to be loud about supporting human rights.
So much yes. So much yes. And you'd be shocked to know, you may lose a few followers if you stand up for the things that you hold dear. You will gain a lot more. Just experience-wise, I've been very vocal about women's rights, especially living in the state that I live. And there have been some that are like, this is supposed to be a crafting channel. And I'm like, yeah, but this crafter stands for basic human rights across the board. So if you don't align with that, see yourself out. That would be fine. You don't need to buy my butts pattern today. But there have been way more people who've come in and been like, oh my God, I love that you stand for something I believe in. So don't be afraid.
We have come to lovingly calling it the trash took itself out.
Yes.
And I stand by that. I think it's just very interesting when, you know, we've posted things that are very much aligned with just, again, basic human rights. And it's coming from a place of being genuine and not from a place of I'm doing this so that, sorry, now I'm just thinking about the Bud Light campaign with Dylan and how
I know
absolutely disgusting that was, because that company used somebody who is so proud of their own path and so proud to be who they are, and they used them to try and get some sort of weird traction with marketing. And what did they think was going to happen with their user base? But the fact that they didn't stand firm in it is what absolutely disgusts me. 100%. If you're going to do something like that, stand firm or don't get on that playing field, because you are disgusting and trash if you do. I'm sorry. It just makes me so mad.
It proves that's not really what they stood for in the first place. They were really just using it as a marketing ploy to be trendy and not actually standing for the thing that they say they did. So again, trash took itself out. And also, let's
human rights are not pawns in marketing. That is
Breach.
The bottom
Say
line.
It again. So. Say it again to the people in the back.
You want it to come from a genuine place. This is not a place to like stand up for human rights so that people will come buy your product. The other part of this that I wanted to touch on was marketing off social media. I love a good newsletter. I have also loved building community with in-person events or attending events that are like in the orbit of what your product is or where your target audience would be, and just go where the people are and hitting the pavement. I think one of the really effective things that I did with Uber when we were just starting out, I would just sit down and go, okay, what are the different use cases for somebody using this product? People need to get home safely after a night out. I would then make a plan to go to different neighborhoods and like literally belly up to the bar and talk to these bartenders and bouncers and tell them about Uber and give them cards to give people for $20 off a first ride. Okay, people might want to grab an Uber to work if they missed a bus, or maybe they just don't want to drive and like parking is horrible and it's worth it for them to grab an Uber to and from work. And we'd go have office hours and bring snacks and treats and play games and tell people about Uber. Those moments really made a difference. And I understand that not everyone is comfortable doing things in person. So thinking about how you can show up or have others show up for you digitally as well to spread the word is also important. I think that we have such, especially in the crafting community, there is a tight-knit, I did not mean that, but it came out. There's a tight-knit group of us, right? There's a lot of us. There's a lot of love to give. Rising tide raises all boats, whatever that phrase is. I say that a lot as well, based on what we're doing with our app, but I think that there is a lot that can be said for supporting each other as well. Yeah.
It's important as makers, even though we can make our own things often, to do exactly what Jen was saying, like raise each other up and just like fangirl and fanboy and fan yourself over these amazing people that you get to see and are inspired by, because very likely people within your network haven't seen them yet. And so sharing and making sure that you're able to do that. I also will say one strategy that has worked shockingly well, and I'm still surprised by it, is like wearing your items if you are selling items, or if you're selling even the digital versions of items. If it's wearable, wear it out, because people will ask you about it and then you can be like, oh my God, I made it. Also, I sell these and boom, here's a business card, or they can follow you on Instagram right there. I have like a shirt that I made in my merch store on my website. And it just says fiber art is art, because too often like fiber arts are left out of the fine art conversation. And that's all it is. It's just words, fiber art is art. And a random man on the street when we were out in this little town called Safety Harbor stopped me and he's like, where did you get your shirt? And I said, oh, I made it. It's for my website, my business, whatever. And he was a master weaver from the 70s. And he was making these incredible woven tapestries when he was younger in college. And he's like, I've never seen someone kind of nail it to say that what I did was art and belonged in fine art, but it was looked down on for so long. And he was a really cool dude to talk to. And we shook hands and gave little elbows of being fiber artists together. So, but it was pretty cool to have him see hey, I like your shirt. Why do you have that? And I'm like, because I'm a fiber artist. And it made conversation right there.
That is amazing. Also, I need one of those shirts. I will be purchasing. I mean, I feel like that's a podcast episode in its own right, is about fiber art and art and all of that. But I do agree that there is some level of, how many times has somebody come up to me and been like, oh my God, I love your sweater. Thanks, I made it. Everybody who makes things has this same story. So yes, wearing what you make is definitely marketing, for sure. Yeah.
Even if it's not the thing you're going to sell, wear the thing that you made, and then you spark conversation that I am a maker. Oh, I have a website. I make this and I sell this stuff. And then boom, you've possibly gotten a sale locally.
For sure.
So this one came from Cardinal Yarn from the Making app. And they asked, I'd love to ask opinions on how to effectively market on multiple apps. It can be so daunting. Yes. So very similar to what DCatB asked and what we were talking about. But see what works. See where your audience is. I will say, for me, I do not sell on every platform. I don't market on every platform. I automate stuff. So Facebook, for me, it's not a thing. It's not my people. It's not really where I find sales. However, my business page has people following it. So I just automate every time I post to Instagram, it goes to my Facebook page. But I don't do any maintenance. You don't have to do all the platforms. The one personally I wish I were better at, because it is absolutely in my wheelhouse, absolutely the people that I would sell to, is Pinterest. I need some tips, tricks, and also patience to get it into a place that is running for me. But that is my own personal journey with Pinterest. But I'll say, from the TikTok and Instagram standpoint, I think, the strategies are different. TikTok is exclusively, minus their strange things that they're trying to do, a video platform, a short form video platform. And so being able to capture engaging content, capitalize on trends, especially trending sounds, finding a way that fits into your niche is really important, but then also being really engaging with other people. So I think the thing that a lot of people, the mistake often people make, is they create content, but they don't consume content in the same way. And they expect a lot more from their followers without, or those who they want to follow them, without it actually working. So you have to create content, but then you also have to be a really good content consumer, because also the algorithm likes that. Also on TikTok, something to note. So they have really stepped up their game with SEO, search engine optimization on videos. So meaning you want to be using text on your videos, and you want the text to reflect what your video is about, as well as capitalize on the captions and the hashtags. Does not mean hashtag stuff. You don't need 20 hashtags like you used to have on Instagram, but just something that is categorically putting your video where it needs to be. The way you can see if you're actually doing this well is if you go on your video right now, go to your profile, go to a video. At the search bar, there's always a search bar that populates on the top when you're watching videos. If that has something that's not related to what the content is of your video, you need to rethink how you're optimizing around that video for search, whether that's, again, in text or your caption. If it says, for my example, on one of my videos, as long as it's something crochet related, I know I've hit the right people. So if someone is searching for crochet something, my videos are likely going to start showing up. So if I went on my video and it said wild rabbits, no one who's searching wild rabbits wants to stumble on a crochet girl who does curse word pillows. That's really important. And then for Instagram, the strategy is different, but Reels, they are prioritizing Reels right now. You can repurpose TikToks for Reels, but they give you negative points if you have it with the TikTok watermark. There's a way around this. Pro tip, look up SnapTik, but in a browser, not the app. Just look it up on a browser. It allows you to just copy a link to your TikTok, paste it into there. You download it as a video and it has removed the watermark for you, so you can repost it onto Instagram. The only problem is that the audio is a little delayed. So if you're mouthing something or you're directly on account for a song or something, it is going to look a little wonky. But just keep that in mind. You can use that. You can repopulate that onto Instagram Reels. I've done that, and I've had some reels that have had 780,000 views, like, in a week, which is crazy, like, way better than even my TikTok performed. So that's a really important one. But then also do not forget about the grid, like your main feed of photos. You still want to be populating that. It doesn't have to be every single day, but just make sure that stays alive, because people will go there to, like, see the quick hit of, like, who you are and what you make and what you do. But Reels is being prioritized. And then I have liked, I don't do this well. I'm just, again, I'm bad at it. But I really like when people are very active in stories. Like, Jen, you're pretty active in your stories. And it's just, like, fun. You get, like, a sneak peek into who this person is behind the scenes. And it does make it a much more, like, close-knit opportunity for you to find a relationship, even from afar, with a maker that you really like. So for all of our makers, show yourself, show who you are. But yes, it is daunting. Find ones that you want to spend time on. Ignore ones you don't. I personally do not know any makers who are on Twitter, for example. So I would probably ignore Twitter also, because Twitter is a dumpster fire right now. So I just, that's my personal opinion. Oh, yeah. Ignore it.
Even sometimes I still feel overwhelmed with everything, and I've been doing this for 13 years. So give yourself grace. Don't get too stressed out about it, because that, again, will lead to burnout. And it's, you want to enjoy what you are doing, at least most of the time. We don't have to do it, enjoy it all the time, because that's, I don't know, too Pollyanna-ish. But another way to get your TikToks without the watermark, this is my pro tip, and it's not perfect, but it doesn't have the sound delay. When you record before you post, within the little edit button at the very top, if you pull that up, and then there is a way to make it full screen, screen record it, and then when you go to post it to Reels, just chop off the ends.
Smart.
And post it there. There is a little black bar that's at the bottom because of the sizing, and I'm sure that if I put it into some sort of, like, video editing thing, it would, I don't care that much because it's only noticeable to me. I can almost guarantee that nobody has seen a reel that I have done this with and been like, how dare she have that black bar at the bottom? But that is my workaround. And I will say, with sharing TikToks to Reels, like, you don't have to do every single TikTok to a reel. It's whatever the messaging that you have on the Instagram platform, share those, and people might also not like that, which happens. We've tested pulling some of our TikTok content onto Instagram, and I know, basically, I've done enough testing where I know what works and what doesn't. Test, it will tell you exactly what you need to be doing in that moment. Don't give things your energy that don't give you joy or bring you value.
The next one is from L MHMK from Instagram, and they said, OMG, how to do photos, my god, so hard, I die. The wonderful thing is we all have smartphones. I would say all, I'm generalizing, there may be some of you who are listening to this not on your smartphone, and that's okay too, but for all of the rest of us who have smartphones, the cameras on those things are really, really good. So I have traded in my digital SLR camera, my DSLR, for my iPhone. And my pro tip, always in natural light, but never in the sun. So you do not want to go and put something, one of your products, like, on your porch in blazing direct sunlight, because that creates a lot of shadows. It also creates, like, some weird washed out colors. It doesn't give a good representation of what your product is or does. But some way with natural light, no artificial lighting, set it up by a window. And then also, if you can, set it up in a way that would show how it's being used. So if you are selling a pillow, for example, stick it on a couch. Make sure that the couch has really nice natural light and show someone what it could look like in their space. If it's a wearable, either wear it yourself or find a friend who isn't too afraid of being in front of the camera and use them as your model. Photograph them on a nice place that's in your town or in your backyard or on your balcony or somewhere, again, with natural light. If it's dark when you finish something and you really want to post it, wait till the morning and wait till you have natural light. Honestly, best tip I could give you, you do not need a fancy camera. You do not need to invest heavily in, like, photography equipment. Use your smartphone. use natural light, put it in a setting that exists, you're good. You're solid. But take a lot of variations, by the way. Just take a bunch. Mm-hmm. Don't take one picture. Take 40 and then find your favorites. And then you can use that for your listings and make sure people can see different usages, different positioning, give it a front and back, give it some space.
Yeah, good lighting for sure. That's number one. And I really have leaned into like perfection is boring. The way of the flat lay that is absolutely perfect with your coffee and your, that I'm not saying that that's 100% wrong. I'm just saying you don't like, there's so much pressure that Instagram has created around all of this, and perfection is boring. And I think that a lot of people are seeing that now. That's a lot of the feedback that we've received from why people love posting in the Making app is you literally can post mid knitting or leather work project and it doesn't have to be perfect, and it's such an enjoyable experience. I think that is the thing to take away. If somebody can look at your photo and tell that you love what you do and that, you know, the product that you are making is something that they would love, those are the two goals. It doesn't need to be this, again, this perfect flat lay.
Yep. Love.
Marston Garden on Instagram says, where other than Instagram to start investing in advertising, Google ads, local papers, etc. So I will say this, I have not done a lot in Google ads, but I think that every time that you are trying something new, it's always test, test, test. So make notes of how much budget you have to test something. If you are testing something, you don't have to put a ton of money into it to see any sort of result. Give it a month or so, maybe two, depending on your budget, and especially with something like Google Ads, and make sure all of your calls to action are clear. There's a way to track, especially if you're going to like put an ad in the local paper that's in print. Make sure that your call to action is clear and an action that somebody can take so that you can see if people are seeing it and it is worth your money. I think that Instagram has been frustrating, as we've said, for us, for a lot of us for a long time. And I think it's also fun to get creative and look for different spaces that might work. You know, when I was at Uber, and I know that I talk about that a lot, but that was where I was at for a really long time and where I gained a lot of knowledge. But we did a lot of things for trade. So like I said before, we didn't have the millions and billions of dollars that they're throwing at ads right now. We would trade ride credits. And one of the really successful partnerships was with a podcast called TVTL. And we gave them X amount of ride credits, and then they would make ads on their podcast. And it would have, here is a code for X amount off your first ride. So there was the call to action and how we tracked how many people use that code. And if I remember correctly, I think that this was the first podcast ad that Uber ever did. And it was so successful that other cities started hopping on board with starting any new advertising. Definitely test it out and make notes of what you think is working. Because maybe the local paper in Seattle will perform differently than the local paper in Dunedin. But at least if you're testing it, you would know where to put your money. And the results might surprise you.
Truly. This actually is very similar to our next question. So I'll go into that and then offer my perspective on both. So DaisyGirl78 on Instagram said, best bang for your marketing dollar, or is the best marketing free? In my experience for small business, not talking about my day job life, because there are absolutely benefits to spending a lot of money in ways to capture audiences that do not organically find you. Like, that is very valuable. It is where the money comes in, right? Because people are like, I didn't even know you existed, and now I do, and I'll buy your product. But for small business, I have not found that paid marketing efforts are lucrative, because your return on that investment does not tend to make it worth your time or energy. And like Jen was saying, with Google ads and even like sponsored posts and stuff, you have to be on those to test and like iterate on them so well so that you don't waste money. Because what happens is they can get out of control really quickly. your budget is spent and you've spent all of your money on the wrong audience because you didn't iterate in the moment. So for all of us makers who do have limited time on our marketing and are trying to do all of the things, sure, you could pay to do advertising or sponsored posts or boosted posts. Finding ways to use advertising dollars to get in front of your audience appropriately is important. So like Pinterest is a really good example. I have spent money on Pinterest. It has actually done well. My sole goal when I did a Pinterest campaign was to get more impressions, which impressions, if you don't know that terminology, is just eyeballs on your marketing or potential eyeballs on your marketing efforts. So if your goal is that you just want people to know you exist without any promise of them converting and becoming a customer, spending a couple bucks, $100, $25 even, like doesn't necessarily matter to just get in front of some more eyeballs, that's potentially lucrative. In terms of like local papers and stuff, depends on what you sell, but we have a really cool little paper. So my mom is an oil painter, and so she gets featured often in some local magazines and stuff because she has just stunning, beautiful art. And she got featured in one that was really cool, and they had her contact information on it, and that gets delivered to all of the homes in the Tampa Bay area. And she got some really interesting business out of that. People were calling her for commissions or calling her for some of her pieces on her website. So that worked out really well for her. And for fine artists, especially painters, the price point is a lot higher than a lot of items that you might be selling on your particular site. One painting could probably do the work, an ROI of 15 or more things that you might be selling. It just depends. But I think make connections locally. I think that's really important. And that is free. Also, something as simple as just like putting your business card up in the coffee shop if they have one of those cork boards. Finding ways to gain visibility that's free. And then Jen mentioned it before, but if you've done things organically that have worked, that might be a place that you can invest some dollars into. So if you have seen that when I do this message and I say this thing, I tend to get a lot more views, I tend to get a lot more clicks, people come to my website or come to my Etsy or come to the making or come wherever and they see me, then maybe you replicate that in some way for a paid campaign. But I'm of the mindset, like, do it all as much free as you can because the return sometimes is really hard to gain. And also, last little nugget here, if it does really well, like if your paid campaign does like exceptionally well, you actually might screw yourself a little bit because you have too much business to get done. Unless you're selling passive income stuff like digital items. If you are hand making items to sell and you get an influx of 1,000 people who previously didn't know you existed because one of your advertising campaigns did super well and you have to fill even a tenth of that order, 100 orders, that is a lot of orders that you are trying to fill in a very short period of time, which actually goes into our next point. So Jen, I'll pause and see if you want to add anything to that.
I think something that we could also talk for 5 million years on is some of these platforms are going to be good for different reasons. So if you think about a customer funnel, there are different steps that people take along this journey that they take with you and your brand. And sometimes platforms like TikTok are great for awareness, but you want to convert them to something off of TikTok, like a newsletter or something else to get to know you better, because TikTok is very much a flash in the pan when it comes to this focus that people have when it comes to watching videos, right? You have a few seconds with them. So also when you're going through these different platforms or testing these different things, think about it from that standpoint as well, where maybe TikTok is your first point of contact, but how can you bring them into something else that possibly will pull them into the third step of purchasing or joining or downloading or whatever that thing is that you're trying to get people to do, whatever your call to action, like ultimate call to action is.
Yeah, I love that. So the next one is from pieceofwork.dc, and they asked how to start, also how to keep the business from eclipsing the joy of creating. I'll hit this one really quickly. Burnout is real. Burnout is very common in the maker space, people, especially those who sell their work. So you go from making something because you really like making it, And people get excited about it and they say, I want to buy that. And then you get excited that like, wow, I can make a business out of this. And 50 orders down the road, you are so sick of making the same thing or the same version of a thing or a similar thing that you lose steam and it becomes a burden, not something that you enjoy doing. So I just recommend protecting your time and energy and limiting what you can take in terms of orders and limiting what you can take in terms of production. There's also a potential that at some point, if your business is highly successful, that you can invest in employees or an employee to help you do that thing. So let's say you have a glass making business and you're making stained glass and people are so excited about the work that you're creating. But your thing is you've been creating the templates for the glass that you're making. You're then fusing the glass and doing all these things. But you have so many orders you can't keep up. You could essentially apprentice somebody in your network or someone that really wants to learn glassmaking or that you trust really well and give them a cut of those proceeds, obviously paying them fair wages. That will allow you to ramp up production if you want, but if you do not have the means, time, energy to have an employee, which you also have to do that legally through taxes and stuff, so it gets really messy, then protecting how much you actually can produce. Also, that creates demand. So let's say you can commit to doing however many a month that you want to put on your shop or allow for custom orders, and that's it. That's the max. Well, then that's demand for people. If they didn't get in under the wire, they didn't pick up on the drop that you made, or they didn't custom order when you had those available, next month when you open that listing back up or you do a shop drop, they're going to want to get in really quickly. And you can use newsletters to do that, email to do that, TikTok to do that. But you just don't want to commit yourself to more than you can handle, because you will burn out and then you will hate doing what you like to do and it will be really sad.
How to start? You just start. And it's scary, right? That is a very scary part of it, is just jumping in and starting. A really good way to dip the toe into this is like writing out your tagline, your mission statement, your values. If somebody were to go to an about page of your business, what would that look like? And I think that's a really good place to have that jumping off point, because then you can start building the narrative around what that is. And there, it's not this like thing that's just floating out in space and you're not sure where it's going to land. But I also wanted to touch on this, and we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but nobody has to make their hobby, AKA what makes them happy, something to make money off of. If I had a dollar for every time that somebody has told me I should sell my knitting, I could make money without selling anything. Like, capitalism has really taught society that if you're quote unquote good at something, we should try and make money off of it. And you don't have to listen to that. Making and crafting is different for everybody. Sometimes it is something that you want to start a business around and something that you are super excited to jump in and make money off of. And sometimes it's what you do to gather with community. Sometimes it's part of your mental health toolbox, as we talked about in last week's episode. So never feel pressure to make money off of doing something that you love unless it's really what is calling to you, because we can't let capitalism win like that. Okay, y'all?
Jen, you are my soul sister. That is so spot on. Like, just because you like doing it doesn't mean you have to sell it. And if it feels bad selling it, like if it feels like you are just constantly trudging up a mountain and keep getting pushed down to the base of the mountain and it is like destroying your soul, don't do it. And I will say too, like, my joy is in watching all of you realize the vision that I had into like your own work. So that's why being a pattern designer is really exciting to me. If I were making and fulfilling pillows, like, I would not have my business. I will put it out there right now. Like, I would not be doing this at all. I would not be having a great time with it. But getting to see my patterns that I like thought up in my brain and then put them onto a pattern and then made a pillow out of them and watching other people do them. And sometimes, like, I have my handwriting on them. This is like a side note, like for the cursive text, and watching my handwriting exist in other people's homes that they've made is like the weirdest and coolest thing. That to me is exciting. And that's why I have my small business. But like fulfilling the orders like for the thing, it would suck up all of the joy that I think I have currently. Okay, last question 100%. From Kayla Vision from Instagram. And Kayla is one of my OG followers. So Kayla has been with me for a very long time. I love Kayla the most. We have babies the same age. Kayla is also a brilliant crocheter. Kayla said, how do you come up with a catchy name and logo? I really like puns. And so I just make sure whatever pun I like doesn't already exist. That is important. Try not to steal other people's names, just like you shouldn't steal other people's intellectual property. You can be inspired, of course, but really do your due diligence. So if there's a name you really like, try to type it into like a .com version. Look it up on Instagram. Look at all the variations that it could be with underscores or periods or so on and so forth. Look it up on the Making app. Look it up on TikTok. Make sure that someone is not capitalizing with that name and has built a brand around that name. And if they haven't, go for it. Enjoy yourself. Have fun with it. But I like puns. If you have not yet explored the world, I feel like I'm opening a can of worms, which we could probably talk 1,000 years about also. If you have not yet explored AI, you know what I was going to say, Jen, I'm sure. If you've not explored ChatGPT yet, it is free for users. And it is super interesting. It's also not a one and done thing. I will put it out here as a marketer. You could say, ChatGPT, write me 14 blog posts that I'm going to put on my blog all about crochet. And then you could paste that copy into your website and you could have a whole blog. But it won't be good because ChatGPT is an AI bot. It lacks empathy and it lacks critical thinking. So what I would say to use ChatGPT for if you're trying to come up with a catchy name or a logo, and DALL-E 2 is also part of this universe for logo creation if you wanted to do that, is prompt it really well and then use that as your starting point if you're feeling really stuck. So like you could type in, Kayla, I'm going to use you as an example because I know you. Can you please come up with 5 different opportunities for a name for a crochet business? I plan on selling baby blankets, pillows, scrunchies, and throw blankets for my couch. My business is very specific in this way, and you want to give them as much information as possible. You could even ask ChatGPT to like, hey, ask me 5 questions about my business to get to know me better before you give me any suggestions, and then it will actually ask you back. But then you can have those suggestions for your name and logo, and then you can decide, okay, that was actually super interesting. If it does exist, scratch it. If it doesn't exist, play with it a little bit. See if there's some way you can make it your own, or if you're like in love with what they came up with, just make sure you do your due diligence that it doesn't exist.
I do love ChatGPT for those reasons. I did a whole episode on here about AI and art with my partner Lars, and I think that AI has been like people are scared of it, but there are ways that you can utilize it to help you, especially within small business. And you're 100% correct, Callie. If you put something into ChatGPT and just copy paste it into something, people are going to be like, what happened to you? Are you okay? Because it really is not, it's very much not a human. I said it during the AI and art episode. I sometimes will throw things into ChatGPT for pulling things for this podcast, and then I will go take the thing that it said and go do the due diligence and research and the writing myself, because again, anything that it says is going to lack any human empathy, and also it talks very differently than I do as a person. So it's very obvious, but having that as like a way to bounce ideas and just throw it into ChatGPT, and half the time it gives me nothing new, and I'm like, okay, let me try something else. But sometimes there will be something that sparks. So not only with name and logo, like if there's anything else that you are stuck on as a small business owner, throw it in there and just see what comes out, because sometimes that can spark something different for you, whether it's copy or ideas for different things within your business. Definitely start utilizing the tools in front of you, which is AI, and it's just going to get better from here. I still am a little meh about the AI and art part, just because of the fact that so much art is put in there and then the artists aren't paid for that. And that, I don't know, it's just there's this like gray area that still exists. If you're not wanting to use AI, sit down and just write a bunch of stuff. Write a bunch of words down. Put stuff together, what things that you love as a person, what will be reflected with your brand, and you never know what's going to come out of it. And then with a logo, get creative with your with yourself, right? Put together a little mood board of what you think you would like. If you have the money to hire somebody, awesome. If not, get super creative. Even if it's just your name for right now in a font that you like, perfect. When you have the time and the money to then hire somebody to create that logo, go do that. That's a really good first step too for like starting, is just utilize your brand name as your logo. Start there and then move forward. Because again, not everything needs to be perfect from the start, right? You just want to start moving forward with it, no matter what kind of business it is. I did want to ask you really quick. You recently went through a rebrand where you changed your name and logo. Why did you feel like it was time for that? And give us a little bit of insight into that.
Yeah. So I got very into needle felting. Like, I'm obsessed. It was like a whole renewed spirit of art that I had not yet explored. And so part of that, I felt like I was shoehorned into doing just crochet because of my previous name, Crochet It Ain't Sew. So I really wanted to be able to like expand my ability to share my love of craft with people. But what's funny is I initially did not want craft in the title at all because of the patriarchal denial that craft is art. However, I took the opposite stance and said, we're taking that back as a form of art. It is arts and crafts, and craft is like a thing that you perfect. And so I fell on the opposite end of the spectrum to be like, fuck that. I am going to like own my crafter business inside of me. And that includes art that I do in every capacity. And then the rebrand was interesting. So I left up my old name somewhere within my profile for a month. But when I launched over the course of a few days with my new name, hey, here's an announcement. Crochet and Sew is now the Morning Crafter. Then I went for like formally Crochet and Sew everywhere. And I recently have taken that all down. So now the Morning Crafter is it. There's no more Crochet and Sew. However, I still do use that in my tagging on Etsy and hashtags on Instagram because people still know me as that. And so I want them to find me if they need to. But otherwise, the Morning Crafter stays.
Thank you for sharing, because I think that it's also okay to realize that something can change to fit what your brand has become.
Yes, and you're not locked in. And I have seen no decline in anything for my purposes after the name change. So if you're nervous, like, don't be. Just make sure you tell your people what's going to happen, communicate with them, and then continue to remind them that is who you are, so that they see that they start to like change their perception of who they know you to be and to this like new entity that you've created.
We went through something similar to that, just basically with our social handles. We started out with the Making app and realized that, hey, we're more than just the app. We have a lot of other things that we're working on, the podcast. We were doing Making Magazine, but we were more than just an app. So we decided to combine Making Zine on Instagram and the Making app into one, which is Making Co. And what I will say, if you are doing something like that, make sure that when you change your name on any social media, that you go back and grab your other handle when it becomes available, and then you can put together a rerouting plan within that. And we still get people who tag the Making app, but it clearly says all over it that we are now Making Co. Yep. And directs people there. So I'm not worried about it. It still has all the same links. If people find that and decide that they are tagging that instead of Making Co., it doesn't bother me because all of that stuff is going to the same place, essentially. Just the content is not there.
Yep.
Okay. So if we didn't cover something that you are curious about within marketing, we can definitely do a follow-up podcast. So if you have questions, send them to hq@makingco.com. We can definitely do some follow-up stuff. And I know that there was a lot of side questing happening within what we were saying. There's so much to talk about. But for right now, let's shift back to crafting. And I want to know, what are you working on right now?
When prepping for this podcast, I did not even include 90% of what I have. I just released a pillow that says scream here with a mouth, open mouth, because as you all know, we like to scream into pillows when we're upset or excited. And so that one has a little arrow, scream here. So that's your scream pillow. And then I'm releasing cry here pillow for the same thing. And it's got a giant eyeball with a big tear. And then you can cry into that pillow or scream into the other pillows. I also just designed one that I'm so excited about. And it is a goose and it says silly goose, and that will be a wall tapestry. And it just made me like chuckle and I thought it was so fun. So I'm doing that. I am participating in Game of Shrooms this weekend. So there is a worldwide art drop happening on June the 10th, which by the time this publishes, this will be over, but it happens every year. So next year for Game of Shrooms, pay close attention. But artists from all over the world are leaving some form of a mushroom somewhere. And those cities, you can go and find a free piece of art that is a mushroom. So Game of Shrooms is happening. So making a felted mushroom for that. One of the ones I'm the most excited about is there was a study from a professor at the University of Reading about the climate crisis. And he produced climate stripes, which are essentially a visual representation of the change in climate over time, especially the last 50, 60 years. And so I am doing a crochet tapestry wall art piece that will be about 14 feet long, but it is made with sustainable bamboo yarn and also yarn made out of plastic bags, recycled plastic bags, to show, visually speaking, like the climate crisis. For climate stripes, I just made a Mr. Rogers doll out of a kit. And then I am sitting in my brand new She Shed, which is my craft studio. Just like a shout out, thankful to all of the people who've gotten me here. So I was like very stark on the sense that I wanted to buy the shed and furnish the shed outright with money that I have made from my crafting business only and not anything that I make from my day life. And I was able to do that. And it has been just like a wild ride to like be sitting in the shed that essentially this business paid for. And I get to then make in. So it's like my little like oasis of crafts. And so I'm working on like unpacking all my stuff from my previous office and like finding little homes for everything and then just like making this even more of an amazing space than it already is.
It's been fun to see the journey of the She Shed and how you've been putting everything together. Y'all, it happened. I finished the embroidery. I did Woo-hoo! It. I've been talking about it for a while. For anyone who is new here, I have been working on my very first embroidery piece, and it was a pattern from Stitch Happy, and it's called Tattooed Shoulders, and it's very beautiful. Definitely go look it up or find me on the Making app, and you can see photos of it. It turned out so well. I learned so much, and I love embroidery. It's so much fun. Still working on the socks. I'm almost ready to start on the second one, and of course, my garden. I'm thinking that it might be a little too hot for the spinach. I think the spinach lived its life, so I think it might be done. We'll see. I'll give an update on the next episode. I know you're all going to be waiting with bells on, just pins and needles to find out what happens to the spinach, but the rest of the garden is doing well. And I guess my question is like, I have a little spot where the spinach is. Once the spinach is done, like, what else should I plant there? Anyone who has ideas, let me know. It's a small spot. I'm in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle, so that kind of gives you climate. It's full sun, so if anyone has ideas, let me know. And then as far as what I'm watching, finishing Ted Lasso. Oh my God. Have you been watching Ted Lasso?
You're behind. We are like two episodes into the new season. We'll get there.
We're not going to spoil anything here, but I will say I fully enjoyed the third season, and I know that there are people out there who are not big fans of it, but I think what they were trying to do was take the focus away from Ted because there is going to be a spinoff. I just love all of the characters and how more of them got to shine this season, and we got to know them better, and it just made me really happy. So I got caught up on The Mandalorian, which, oh my gosh, shout out to the moments between Lizzo and Grogu. I literally cannot with Grogu, like every single time. His little face, I can't. And then last night, Vanderpump Rules, the third part of the reunion. Oh my God. I need to find my Vanderpump Rules people within the Making app because, oh my goodness, it's just a hot mess. I say that every week.
I am a Below Deck gal, and I live for Below Deck. So that's my trash TV. But I have heard the Vanderpump Rules has been, this one has been like pretty wild.
I will say, as a Bravo fan, I feel like I now need to get into Below Deck.
It's fascinating. It is like so good. And I think the cast have all been, for the most part, quite likable or in some way, shape or form, watchable at least. So I'm on season 7 of original Below Deck. And then we'll be obviously going on all of the offshoots of Sailing Yacht and Mediterranean and Adventure. So that's my plan.
I think that there is something very lovely about watching reality TV and crafting, because you don't always have to pay attention, but it's there. It's, I don't know, it's a happy bubble for me. And I hope that other people feel that way as well. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Just another reason why we're friends. As we bring every episode to a close, we share a moment of gratitude. Callie, what are you grateful for?
So many things. Like, I feel like life is just really firing on a lot of good cylinders right now for me. But rapid fire, Jen, you for like getting to meet you and having me on the podcast. It's like such an honor to be invited to chat about the things I love the most, crafting and marketing. Come on, could not have been a better opportunity. Just the entire crafting community that I've gotten to cultivate and meet through this journey has been so supportive and so lovely and just so cool. My husband, he is like wrangling the kids right now and also is just like the most supportive partner. He's absolutely like man written by a woman and so non-traditional in any sort of gender roles in our home. I've known him since I was 16. He's a lovely, lovely man. My kids, I have 2 kids, a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and they are hilarious and fun and keep us on our toes and are so cute. Even my stinky old dog, our first baby, mystery age, we don't know, mystery met, we don't know, but he is also lovely. And then shockingly, my last one I will add that I'm grateful for. If you would have asked me this 2 months ago, maybe, I would have never included anything exercise related at all ever in my life, because it has been at least 5 years since I've exercised, since I got pregnant with my son. But I recently started going to Pure Barre because I needed to do something to just activate some endorphins and feel a little better in my existence. And I'm a former competitive figure skater, so I knew I would like Pure Barre just based on exercising. And I have been hitting it hard, and it has been so empowering and so fun. And they know how to make you feel like really comfortable in your own skin and your own body while also like kicking your ass. And it's like exactly what I enjoy. So I am very grateful for my Pure Barre studio that I have found here.
I just learned something new about you. I did not know that you were a competitive figure skater. So the more you know, that is amazing. Beautiful. I am grateful for social media when it works in good ways. Bringing community and people together. Think about it. We are literally on opposite sides, kitty corner of the United States. And if it weren't for TikTok, I don't know. I believe that people, you find your way to people. And if you're meant to be in each other's orbit, it will happen. But I think that the fact that there are platforms out there like TikTok and even all of the people in the Making app, like I said, every time somebody goes, oh, this post that somebody posted that I loved, and this is what the guest of the week on this podcast says, I'm like, yes, I know, you know, what they make and, you know, their story and all of this. And it's just this community that has come together through the internet that is good, because obviously everything can be used for not good, but focusing on the good part, because there are so many of you out there that I have met through this, and I am thankful for all of you and the platform that brought us together. Callie, where can everybody find you again in the Making app and other places?
Yes, so my username is the same across the board. It is @the_morningcrafter. So please come find me. Jen, thank you so much for having me on. This is like absolutely a pleasure. And thank you all for listening. And I hope to see you out there in the internet, into the interwebs.
I love the art behind you.
This is like a real picture of a flapper. And then she took off all the clothes, and it's protest art from women's rights protests from like all the years.
Hell yeah. To join the amazing community of makers in the Making app, head to themakingapp.com to download and sign up, or head to your favorite app store and search Making. You can listen to the Making Conversation podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Of course, we'd love for you to subscribe and share with your friends. But also, did you know that you can listen to the Making Conversation podcast in the Making app? Open up the Making app and click Discover. Scroll down to podcasts and you'll see all current and past podcasts listed there. You can listen while you scroll the feed, post details in a project, search through the marketplace, or even just have it out while you're working on your favorite whip. If you've made it this far and you're interested in sponsoring Making Conversation, send us a note at hq@makingco.com and we'll be in touch. As always, thanks for listening and we'll see you in the Making app.